Bienvenidos oyentes, para la quinta carrera hemos ido a Europa, a la Barcelona, España, para el Gran Premio de España. Sí, Formula One has returned to the home continent and to the Circuit de Catalunya, a track the drivers and teams are well familiar with. The front row of the grid continues to shine in murk silver, and the WDC Golden Boy flounders as his Aussie teammate stays racy. Can the driver starting in P1 clinch his first win in Catalonia? Will El Machismo Fernando score points for Ferrari and his home crowd? Hold on to your sangria and stay tuned, oyentes. Esta es Desiree, la reina de F1 Weekly, and this is your Spanish Grand Prix Racecast. Hasta luego, te amo, and adios.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. With the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 655, May 15th, 2014. Nasser?
This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Vive Cuervo and Nando. Drink responsibly, my friend.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Montezemolo seen at the DNF Chapel in Vatican City. Can Rosberg shake off the Hamilton rattle? Kimi not happy at Ferrari? But then, is anybody happy at Ferrari? Of course, we've got Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi and 50 words from the F1 Weekly Forum on the Grand Prix de España. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. And you're talking about Luca being at the DNF Chapel. The way things are going there at Ferrari, he may have to have a change of ideology.
Yes, they need to do a big shuffle. I mean, I know Domenicali stepped down, but to be honest with you, the new guy is definitely no Flavio Briatore.
No, so, the rumors are, the reports are, they are trying desperately to get Ross Brawn back, Adrian Newey at the team, and they're willing to throw any money. And let's see what happens.
It was sad, except for the last seven laps of the Spanish Grand Prix, when what I did was I pretended that Nando was second fighting for the championship. And then when he passed Kimi Raikkonen and the crowd just roared, it was exciting. I thought he was going for the win. I know it wasn't, but it looked good.
Yeah, you know, right now they're not even second best, and that's where the problem is.
Oh, I know. That's the sad part, is we're watching a great fight between two great teammates who we thought were going to be part of the action this season. And, you know, when you're fighting for sixth and seventh place, it's a pretty sad state of affairs.
Yes, and when you see the prancing horse on the side of these cars and they're languishing like that, it is very sad indeed.
It is very sad indeed, but what can you do? At least they're right behind Red Bull. I know Lotus F1 came out a couple of days ago and said that their goal is to beat Ferrari, which right now doesn't seem like a really challenging goal, but there you have it.
Well, you say that Ferrari is right behind Red Bull proves the point, you know, misery loves company.
That's true. And unfortunately, once again, we get a dominating Mercedes Grand Prix finish. It could be like this all season long.
You know, well, things do change sooner or later. But Clark, what I've been thinking lately, that, in the opening round, Lewis had an issue and dropped out. Life does not depend on ifs and buts. But let's just assume he had not had any problem that day in Melbourne. And had he won that race, which he most probably would have, he would have gone five races. Can you imagine what a teammate would feel if your teammate wins the opening first five races?
Yeah. No, and to be honest with you, so far, Rosberg is doing a pretty good job of looking pretty nice. Still, I mean, on the podium, he was behaved. So far, I mean, he doesn't want to finish second, but there are no Prost, Ayrton Senna explosions. Everything is pretty cordial.
It is so far, and sooner or later, it will get to him that, man, I can't beat this guy. David Hobbs once said, talking about Alain Prost when he was leaving McLaren, his take was, if you cannot beat your competitor in the same car, equal car, how will you beat him in a lesser car? And if this Hamilton train keeps going, he's going to turn Rosberg into Aki Kovalainen.
Well, see, I think that's the extreme end of the spectrum, but certainly we could have a Rubinho back in town.
No, I mean, I think even Rubinho would have won races if he had a car that was faster, unless there were calls coming in.
I understand, and Rubinho did win races at Braun GP. So,
and Ferrari also.
And I think Rosberg will win some races, but I think it's going to be an all Mercedes season in the end,
yeah.
Unless Red Bull really, really have some great luck and Mercedes have some bad luck.
Yeah. But let me just tell you, Clark, if this Lewis Hamilton, if he gets 10 plus wins, which is very, very possible given the domination of this package, his talent, and the way things are going and the number of races, but if he gets 10 plus wins and Rosberg is sitting on two or three, that will pretty much, his dishes will be done at the top level of Formula One. I should say top, you know, tier of teams.
I agree.
Yeah, nobody's really looking for a fantastic number two.
We've seen this in the past, and this will continue in the future. But nevertheless, well, for Mercedes fans and Lewis Hamilton fans, this is a great season.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan. I'm a fan of any fantastic driver. It's interesting to see, Clark. You know, I mean, you had look at Sebastian Vettel last year, had a dominating car, and this year he's having some issues, apart from this race, of course. What a difference a fantastic car will do for a fantastic driver.
Yes, and we've said it before, no package, no delivery.
Exactly.
Yes, so no, fantastic stuff, of course. Spain, Barcelona, everybody's been there a billion, billion times. I believe Jenson Button has more miles under his belt in Barcelona than any Grand Prix driver right now on the grid. And I like Barcelona. Great place, great fans, lots of Nando fans. It's exciting.
Yeah, you know, and like Monza, if you don't have a grandstand ticket, you can still walk around and have very good views. And I really, really like the city. And I've been there a few times.
That's true. And you can have a nip of Tio Pepe.
Exactly.
But anyway, well, let's go to qualifying. I mean, nothing exciting. Your buddy Maldonado, of course. His usual stuff.
Well, it was a shocker. The Corvair Maldonado.
Yes, Corvair Maldonado. And it's funny. Don't forget, Corvair had a car called Monza.
Oh, my God.
But in the end, qualifying was sort of exciting because, to be honest with you, I thought Rosberg had pole. And when he didn't, I was really disappointed. And I'm also been disappointed with Kevin Magnussen not really getting into Q3 and being as exciting as he was in Australia.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it was a case of beginner's luck. I mean, the kid is very good. And I saw a similar thing in GP2, the guy who won the opening round. His first GP2 race, Stoffel Vandoorne, was not a factor in Spain. So these things happen, and it's not like McLaren has a top-level car right now. I'm also a little disappointed in Kevin Magnussen, but this is Formula One. It takes a little time to get going. But you know what I was really, I mean, it was pretty much not very good for Maldonado to be on and off the track and right away into the wall of voodoo. An amazing thing is this is the track where he had his one and only historic win, and that did not even keep Pastore on pace and on track. So that's
well, I mean, he had that historic win, which was great, over Fernando. But let's not forget, I believe Vettel had DNF'd in that Grand Prix.
Well, but nothing, you cannot take anything from that victory, that's for sure.
I agree, and I don't take anything away from that win. It was a great win for Williams when they really needed it.
Yes, and anyway, the normal characters were out in Q1, both Caterham's and Marussia cars. This time, Chilton going faster than Bianchi. And Chilton has been catching up to Bianchi, which is encouraging for him and his supporters. And Adrian Sutil, your hero, continued the Sauber tradition this year of at least one car not getting out of Q1. I'm feeling sorry for Sauber. You know, I hope Peter Sauber is a nice guy, looks like a nice guy. I was hoping a few things from that team, and we've been long fans of Esteban Gutierrez, but the package is not percolating properly.
No, and you know what? They had some excitement going last year, getting in the top 10, but that they have definitely took a couple of steps back. I sort of wish Kamui Kobayashi was at Sauber, but in the end, like you said, the package is not very good. We know where the Ferrari motor is, so what can you do?
Yeah, and you know, this Russian rubles that are going to come in courtesy of Sergei Sirotkin, I think they are stuck in the Crimean port.
Exactly. They're still docked at the port.
So we'll see how that pans out. Anything? Any surprises for you in Q2?
No, not really. It was pretty much just what I expected from the way the season started. I was hoping Force India would do. They looked really strong. They have the Mercedes engine, but they seem to be languishing. They should be beating Ferrari, and they're not. They should be right up there with Williams and fighting with Valtteri Bottas. And for some reason, they seem to have taken a couple of steps back as well.
Yes, and both of them were not getting out of Q2 this time around. Your hero, just aforementioned hero, Mr. Magnussen, also did not advance. And this Russian kid, Daniel Kvyat, third time in a row, he qualified 13th and once again outpaced his illustrious teammate, your homeboy, Jean-Éric Vergne.
Let's not forget Jean-Éric Vergne had a penalty. I believe his wheel came off in Friday practice.
Yeah. And he has come up with a good idea, you know, that they should not penalize a driver for the mistake of the team, which I can understand. Maybe they should give them some financial penalty and or some points docked or something. But I think they should not screw somebody's race or a qualifying, you know, opportunity.
Absolutely. No, I agree with Vergne. It's stupid to penalize a driver that's for something that he has completely no control over.
Yes, sir. Any thoughts on Bottas qualifying, how good he did?
Very impressive. I mean, let's face it. Bottas out-qualifies his teammate, which is what you're supposed to do. And he has a great race. It's very impressive. I mean, towards the end, Vettel gets him, and Vettel finishes fourth. But still, Bottas has definitely proved himself, and he'll be at Williams next year, I guarantee it.
Yeah, he's making a good case, just like Nico Hülkenberg has been for the past few years.
A great start by Lewis Hamilton. Takes the lead very quickly, and by the first lap, has got over a second over Nico Rosberg. And also, both Williams have a fantastic start. Valtteri Bottas slipstreams into third, and what I was surprised is Fernando Alonso didn't, I think maybe the paella was a little heavy last evening because his start was not exciting. Whereas on the other hand, Kimi Raikkonen kept ahead of him, and Raikkonen did a good job in defending against Fernando Alonso. Fernando Alonso was poking his head in there a couple times, but nothing great. Also, a dreadful start from Jenson Button, who had dropped out of the top 10 into 13th. Fascinating stuff. Felipe Massa, he started 13th. And let's not forget, Sebastian Vettel had a penalty for a gearbox change. So he started in 15th, ladies and gentlemen. And he's really the one to watch and did an outstanding job throughout this whole race. I think Red Bull is really stepping it up because their dependability is there. The drivability of the car is there. They're picking it up, too. And, of course, Daniel Ricciardo does a great start, keeping third, doing a great job.
Yeah, and, you know, media has been reporting, first started out as a rumor, but now it looks like Sebastian won, beat the competition so much last year that his car was bent. So it looks like they have found what the problem is, and he was very, very competitive. And I think, Clark, it's just a matter of few races before we see the finger.
That's true. We haven't seen the finger, and people don't talk about the finger, but the finger is still there. It's just tucked away in his pocket. Just a quick correction. I said that Ricciardo was third. No, Valtteri Bottas, with that great start, was third. Ricciardo is right behind him, doing a fantastic job. Lap 9, Daniel Ricciardo says he's going to back off a bit to cool his tires. And meanwhile, Sebastian Vettel is up to 13th. Just passing Esteban Gutierrez, your friend and partner in crime. But no, great race. But then in the middle, not much excitement. For me, Mercedes really took off with this Grand Prix. And you could tell by the camera work, a lot of times the camera is not even on the two leading cars because there's more excitement between Fernando and Kimi, Valtteri Bottas and Ricciardo. It's a Formula One race, and I love all Formula One races.
No, I also noticed how much time was being spent on non-race leaders, which in a way is good. And of course, there is a lot of good dicing going on behind the leading two cars, you know.
Yes, I agree. Lap 16, and this is the way it is. Sebastian Vettel is trying to pass Kamui Kobayashi, but the driver of Caterham defends in turn 9. Vettel tries it again, and this time in turn 10, makes Kamui capitulate. A lot of times, Nico Rosberg is the faster of the two Mercedes on lap 17, but Lewis Hamilton was doing such a great job. But Lewis Hamilton, throughout this whole Grand Prix, was not happy with his team.
And you know, I've noticed he's extremely complimentary of... I saw that with him even when he was fighting with Massa for the championship. He's very, very complimentary of his closest challenger, which is kind of interesting.
I agree. Lap 20, Nico Rosberg says the fastest lap of the race. But then on the lap 21, Lewis Hamilton says the fastest lap of the race with a 1:31.214. Lap 22, Nico Rosberg pits and takes on hard tires. There's a split strategy there. I believe medium-medium or medium-hard-medium. It's very interesting, and I was very impressed. The excitement of the last six laps where Rosberg was just catching Hamilton, but Hamilton, he's such a good driver and so competitive, he just wouldn't give in. It was very, very exciting. I really enjoyed the last 10 laps of this Grand Prix. I thought it was very, very fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sooner or later, when Nico had a faster car and tires, he will pounce on Hamilton and take a win. Who knows? They may collide, and next thing you know, a man from Perth, Australia is the winner of his first ever Grand Prix, and that should be great.
I agree. Nico Rosberg might start looking at some of those Ayrton Senna Prost films and get some kooky ideas. Now, let's not forget who else qualified really well, and that was Romain Grosjean.
Yeah, he's fighting the good fight, that's for sure.
Yes, in a not a great car with limited funding, and of course it came out in the press that some teams have not written a check to Renault for the motors.
Yeah.
It came out that Lotus F1, they say they're paid, everything is fine, so I think they're putting the pressure on Caterham.
That's pretty sad. You know, you're in Formula One and you cannot pay for your engine bills.
Well, what can you do? You have to prioritize your billing, just like you and I. And unfortunately, gas and electricity came up first.
Sure.
Yeah, in the middle of the race, Lewis Hamilton is complaining about oversteer and his tires. Once again, Nico Rosberg sets the fastest lap of the race on lap 32. It's, for me, a Mercedes win for sure. I don't see these guys. These guys are smart. You know, this is not the 80s and the 90s. Nobody's crashing into each other, except for Maldonado.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, and that could be it. Maybe Maldonado was just born in the wrong period.
Yes, you know, it's very nice to see drivers from all parts of the world, but, you know, he's really crashing all the time, just not very good. He needs to learn from his mistakes by now.
I agree. No, what can you do? On lap 41, the Mercedes team radio says Lewis Hamilton 0 to Rosberg, 3.7 seconds. Hamilton responds, "Where you been for the last couple of laps, man? Just letting you get through the traffic," comes the response. So Hamilton is sort of not happy that they're not talking to him enough and giving him data. It's a very interesting team relationship here. I was surprised to hear this because, like you said, Lewis Hamilton is usually a pretty complimentary fella, but you could tell he was, let's say, not mad, but he certainly was perturbed with their strategy and Nico Rosberg nipping at his heels.
Yeah, but I'm sure, you know, they in their pre-race briefing or whatever they do, I'm sure they run a lot of scenarios, and I'm sure there's a lot of intra-team rivalry. You know, Rosberg guys want to see him win, Lewis people want to see him win. I'm sure they discuss, you know, hey, if we do this and the other guy does that, what are we going to do?
I agree with that. I think what he was ticked off about, and maybe they didn't talk about this enough in their pre-race briefing, but on the final pit stop on lap 43 for Lewis Hamilton, he got stuck on the hard tires, whereas Rosberg was on the mediums and could put in those quicker laps. And let's not forget, everybody's complaining about the Pirelli compounds this year being too hard, especially Romain Grosjean. I mean, he's not in the limelight very often, but he hates these 2014 compounds. They're just too hard. They're hard to get to temperature. The Pirellis haven't been talked about too much because of the great racing we've seen at front. I think the Pirellis are stinko.
While Sebastian Vettel is struggling, I would like to see Mark Webber at one of the F1 races, and the camera goes to him when he's duking out with Kamui Kobayashi or trying to fight with Max Chilton. I wonder what Mark Webber is thinking about this Sebastian Vettel situation right now.
Yeah. Now, here's some more chit-chat from Lewis Hamilton on lap 47. Hamilton asks his team what his lap time was like before he pitted. And the team says, it was good, Lewis. Then he responds, why did you bring me in then? In a soothing tone. We are keeping you on the optimum strategy, Lewis. Optimum strategy. For some reason, he was always suspect of what Mercedes was doing, almost as if Mercedes was actually trying to get Rosberg to win, and Lewis was having to question every little decision, and I hadn't seen that in F1 for a while.
Well, that's a mentality of a racing driver, you know, unless they win the race, everybody's out to get them.
That's true, and he knew that Rosberg was starting to catch up. He knew that Rosberg was on the medium compound. Now, on lap 56, Nico Rosberg closes to within 2 seconds of Lewis Hamilton, while Sebastian Vettel sweeps past Kimi Raikkonen for fifth place. And that was just because Kimi had dropped his popsicle, wasn't paying attention. But that's okay. Now, Sebastian Vettel on lap 58 is flying, going after our friend Valtteri Bottas.
Yes, there was quite a bit of action, and I'm glad the camera caught most of it. So it's very exciting and enjoyable for sure.
I agree. Lap 59, the gap between Hamilton and Rosberg is only 1.4 seconds. Now we're talking the excitement. The last six lap of this race, it's fun to watch. And like I said earlier in the podcast, my favorite part was watching Fernando Alonso hunt down Kimi Raikkonen. Now that was good racing.
No, that was very exciting, especially being in front of his...
Exactly. In front of his amigos.
Yes, and I was very surprised, like you said, that Kimi was able to stay ahead and have such a commanding performance over Nando this time out.
It's all about strategy. Don't forget, Kimi Raikkonen only pitted two times, where Fernando pitted three times, and he was still able to pass. And for me, the real sad part, and this is when you'll see Montezemolo at Vatican City on his knees a lot more often, is when both Mercedes lap Kimi Raikkonen.
Yeah, that would be pretty sad.
That was pretty sad. Yeah. I mean, that was a sad day for me, especially when the race, when they get to Europe, the first European Grand Prix, and Ferrari is lapped. That's stunning. I can see why Domenicali stepped down. You don't want to be in the pits when that's happening, at least in the Ferrari garage.
Your hombre, Nando, had some issues with his Pirelli P0s, and he switched to a three-stop strategy. And he was running on mediums in the final stint, which allowed him to rattle Raikkonen and pass him. And somebody has to get Kimi a Klondike bar so the Iceman can cool down. Apparently, he was pissed off on the cool-down lap asking who's making these calls.
Exactly. He was questioning the strategy. So it's more entertaining when Lewis Hamilton is leading the race and questioning the strategy. Ferrari, they have bigger issues than Kimi Raikkonen questioning the strategy to finish 6th, 7th, 8th, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, his seventh place finish was his best result of the season. Same way he started in Melbourne. When the best result for a Ferrari driver is seventh, you know something is wrong, terribly wrong.
I know. It was very sad. But then the last few laps where we see Nico Rosberg really getting close to Lewis Hamilton. I mean, we're talking 6 tenths of a second. It was a great Grand Prix. Also, Ricciardo getting around Valtteri Bottas, that was very exciting. And finishing, I thought it was a great Grand Prix. I was happy for Lewis Hamilton. Four in a row is very hard to do. And now I'm very proud of Hamilton because he has not mocked Sebastian Vettel by using the finger.
No, I think these people are their own, you know, personalities. But I do remember once, I think it was when Lewis Hamilton won a race and he made a comment on the warm-up lap. That's what I'm talking about. And Sebastian quoted him a few races later when he won a race. But,
yeah.
You know, the finger is unique to Sebastian Vettel, and not everybody has to show that.
That's true. And a fantastic race for Sebastian Vettel, finishing fourth. So we had Mercedes. We had Red Bull Renault, who have come a long way. I mean, these guys look so terrible in January, and now they're right behind the Mercedes. So I think with some luck, they're going to continue staying on the podium, and you can never tell what happened. In Monaco, which is the next Grand Prix, the crown jewel, it very well could be Rosberg and Hamilton crashing, Sebastian Vettel winning, or even better, Nando.
I would like to see a first-time winner, and the best person to have that shot is Daniel Ricciardo. So that will be good. Kevin wins. That will be great, too. But I think it's going to be one of the silver cars, Clark.
I know. But I have to dream.
Yes.
I have to dream. And anything can happen in Monaco. You never know. Maybe we will have rain.
Well, if Jarno truly can win a race there, so can Sebastian Vettel and Nando.
And if Olivia Panis could win there.
Yeah.
So, yes. No, that's why I like Monaco. People who don't have a chance to win, win sometimes. So let's hope for something exciting. I enjoyed the Grand Prix de España. I thought it was great, and I feel bad for Ferrari. For me, that's the biggest talk of the town. How could Ferrari fall so badly on their face? Knowing, you know, with these new rules, I expected them to be fighting for the championship, and now they have no chance.
No, I was expecting them to do very well, given their experience with turbo engines, this and that, but this is really, really bad.
It is very bad. I think they do need a full shakeup. I mean, from the aero package. I mean, you know, last year they were blaming the wind tunnel not being calibrated properly. I mean, every year it's some kind of excuse, and in the end, it's the team, it's the car, it's the package. So there you have it. Anyway, I know you've got an outstanding mantra coming up.
Yes, sir. But and, you know, just I want to give a quote of the day comes from Sebastian Vettel.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I'd like to hear that.
Yes, on the cool down lap, after being congratulated by his engineer Rocky for fastest lap, Seb responded, and I quote, "I'm very happy with that. Soon the star will go down." End of quote. So he's dissing his own German star of Mercedes Benz.
Wow.
But you know what I'm thinking, Clark? Remember in 2008 when Braun came up with the one-trick pony, the double diffuser?
Yep.
And they were so dominant. And you remember how the second half went for the team, especially Jenson Button?
Yep.
So this thing that Mercedes has done, you know, where they have put some part of the turbocharger or whatever it is on the other side of the engine, which is helping keep the system cool. Sooner or later, I don't know if it can be copied and incorporated into the engine design now, but sooner or later, the competition will catch up. And sooner the better, obviously. Who knows, you know, if McLaren can win 15 out of 16 races, you know, maybe Mercedes can go, the star can keep shining all season long.
No, it's a very good point. This year, Mercedes, basically, they're the ones with the double diffuser, and everybody else is playing catch up. Just, so give us the championship points.
Well, yes, sir. We have a new leader in the World Championship, LCH, 100 points, all from four straight wins. Not bad, huh?
Fantastic.
Second is Pretty Boy Floyd, 97 points. And third is Muy Macho, Hombre de España y Maranello, 49 points. I just have a feeling that Nando is going to bail out of this team at the end of the season. I will not be surprised.
With a car this bad and he's third in the championship, it's hard to believe. I mean, we've only had five races, but this is it. I mean, this is going to be another season where Fernando is making Ferrari look even better than what they really, really are.
Much better, I would say.
Yes, much better. So, yes, I just feel sorry for Nando. It's been a long time since he's had a championship, 7 years, and that's just not fair for Ed Machismo.
Yeah, you know, especially for a man who dethroned Michael Schumacher.
Exactly!
Almost won the championship in his first year with McLaren. 2010, Petrov poured some vodka on his, paella in Abu Dhabi, of all the places. So it's been a pretty rough ride for the Espanol Matador. And I feel sorry because the guy is a tremendous racing talent.
Yes, no, and I'm impressed with his demeanor, not getting frustrated and continue to fight with a team that obviously is in disarray. I'm afraid, but let's face it. The rumors of Fernando Alonso driving a Honda next year are very, very strong.
And you know, Clark, if Williams gets their act together and they're doing very well, if they can get the, maybe he can take his 6th-10th to Williams and replace Felipe Massa, and then voila.
Wow. Now that would be exciting.
Yeah, but you know, when that 6th-10th comment was made about Nando at McLaren, somebody from the Lewis side said, yeah, he did bring 6th-10th, but Lewis brought 7th-10th. So, body pants all around.
Well, we'll see what happens. But I like that scenario. I'd love to see. Fernando is not finishing his career at Ferrari. It's not going to happen unless something drastic changes. Fernando wants to retire with one more championship.
Yeah, I think he's got a few more in him if he can get into the right package.
Yes, exactly. And the package right now has a big star on it.
Yes, it's a okay. Horse.
Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll be back after this brief message.
Attention, Formula One fans. How would you like to have access to an all-inclusive, USA-based Formula One website that provides discounts and reviews on Formula One ticket, apparel, travel, and collectibles companies? Go to F1FanAdvisor.com and see for yourself. Whether it's finding the highest-rated Formula One memento stores, ticketing companies, or apparel stores, F1FanAdvisor.com is the place to find it. Plus, F1FanAdvisor.com has negotiated some serious discounts for USA-based fans with select companies on their site, so check it out now. And for a limited time, F1FanAdvisor.com is offering their free report, The 5 Costly Mistakes to Avoid When Purchasing Formula One Tickets, so you can avoid the ticket-buying pitfalls that most F1 fans make. Go to www.f1fanadvisor.com to see how big of a discount you can get. It only takes seconds, and it's completely free. Get your discounts, plus the free report, The 5 Costly Mistakes to Avoid When Purchasing Formula One Tickets, absolutely free. Race to www.f1fanadvisor.com now.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards to everybody. And we shall start the Mondial with another motorsports mantra. LCH is giving the boa constrictor treatment to Pretty Boy Floyd, ever so slowly choking the life out of his F1 World Championship aspirations. Like Eddie Irvine, Rubinho, and Gerhard Berger before him, Nico in the nick of time could have been a contender and world champion, only if Hamilton had stayed at McLaren and if Mercedes had put some German by the name of Dieter Dimpelhoff as Nico's teammate. But storms are brewing and hopes may be sunk on the waterfront as the LCH Armada sails to his second title. Before they got into single-seaters, LCH and Nico were teammates at MBM Karting Team, run by Rosberg Sr. They traveled and raced together. Even then, LCH had Nico's area code and number. Now it looks like he even has his zip code. By halfway into the 2014 season, Nico may already be wondering about all tomorrow's parties. Brother Louis is coming on strong, and in the Arabian Night in November, he may be kingman of Formula One for the second time. And we shall see as the season progresses. Things are looking very, very good for Lewis Gall Hamilton. What say you, Mr. Rogers?
Absolutely true. I mean, I didn't think he would get another championship so soon, but actually it's been a little while for him as well. It's interesting how Ross Brawn left the team right at the peak, the pinnacle of their success. So I'm sure, I think it's a given by now that for sure Mercedes will win. But let's not throw in the towel too quickly for Nico. Things could happen, and I have a funny feeling his father is going to give him a good talking to.
Yes. Okay, sir. Now we shall move to support series at Barcelona, Circuit de Catalunya. And what better way to start than with our favorite Happy Dos? The feature race of round two saw an impressive and smart win by Johnny Chicardo. That was very, very good. I watched it on the web. Championship leader Julian Palmer was second with Felipe Nasr third. Alexander Rossi had a darn blowed up when he was fighting with his Indonesian teammate Rio Haryanto. In Sunday's sprint race, cousin Felipe celebrated his 50th GP2 start with his maiden victory of the series. So my felicidade and congratulations to him and his familia. He had started sixth and was in the lead by lap two. And he really, really looked very strong. It was like a LCH kind of performance. Championship leader Julian Palmer was second. And pole man from Alsace, not Sebastian Loeb, but Tom Dillman was third. And Tom Dillman, you know, he's a pretty good racer, but because of sponsorship, he's in, he's out. I would like to see this kid get a full-time ride in GP2 or even better in IndyCar racing. Hoppe 3's season opener, which was of course means GP3, season opener in Barcelona was won by English driver Alex Lynn, who is now supported by Red Bull. Jimmy Eriksson from Sweden was second, and Kiwi Richie Stanaway was third. And Richie Stanaway Clark is a very, very talented kid. He was on his way after dominating the German F3 and then had a huge crash, which injured him and sidelined him in World Series by Renault a few years. Then he started doing some sports car racing. So good to see him back in single-seater racing. Second race of the weekend on Sunday was won by English driver Dean Stoneman over Swiss pole sitter Matteo Tuscher. And Dean Stoneman, if anybody wants to read his Spartan's story here, he's a young, talented British kid. And he was diagnosed with cancer, some serious form of cancer, and then, you know, survived and is now back in action and doing very well. So good for him. From GP3, we go to F3 and the historic Pau Grand Prix in the south of Francia. And it was you, Mr. Rogers, the ever historian on for both sides of the pond. I think you once told me that Mrs. Lincoln spent some time in Pau.
That's absolutely correct. Exactly. She was convalescing in Pau.
Wow.
Yes, and this was an exciting Grand Prix. Pau is a fantastic race. I mean, if anybody wants to go see historic Grand Prix cars, historic F3 cars, and the F3 weekend, it's terrific.
Yeah, it's a fantastic street track, and this is very, very high on my list to go. And hopefully one of these days you will see me sending you a postcard from Pau. Okay, the winner in race one was local garçon Esteban Ocon. He is making quite a name for himself in this series in his rookie season. Tom Blomqvist, son of Stig, won the second race, and Swede Felix Rosenqvist was the winner of the main event. And now we go to WTCC, World Touring Car Championship. The Lopez and Loeb show continues in Slovakia ring. The Argentine Jose Maria Lopez took pole, and his Citroen teammate, your hero, your second Dios after Nando. Who's a bigger god for you, Nando or Loeb?
They both go to the same house of machismos.
That's good. So Sebastian Loeb won the race in rainy condition. And you know, one great thing, Clark, I've been enjoying lately, a lot of these races, World Touring Car, Poe, Formula 3 races, thanks to good people of the world, they are uploaded on YouTube within a day or two. So I've been enjoying a lot of these things lately. Heavy rainfall led to cancellation of the second race. And now we go to the Grand Prix of Indianapolis. You know, they had a road race at Indianapolis?
Yes.
I did not watch that. I was out of the...
I didn't see it, but apparently the start of a race was sort of chaotic.
Yeah, because pole sitter Sebastian Saavedra stalled and he was hit hard. But the race looks like it was a good success. The Mucky Mucks at Brickyard are very happy. And the race was, and you have to be happy, the race was won by a fellow Francais, Mr. Simon Pagenaud.
Exactly. I was very happy about that. And let's not forget, we have to mention that longtime F1 Weekly listener,
Mr. Hardy.
Exactly. Or Auto Racer 5 is super busy, so we don't see him on the forum. But he's now in journalism, got press credentials for the Indy 500, so hopefully we'll be getting a report from him.
Yeah, you know, I would like to say congratulations to Christopher, and hopefully he can do some interviews for F1 Weekly, and, you know, with the checks that he will get from here, he can buy all the country fried chicken at Cracker Barrel.
Well, not only that, but let's not forget, I certainly hope that maybe F1 Weekly had a part in convincing this young man and shaping him into the journalist that he is today.
Well, if that's the case, he better succeed.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we wish him all the best. Okay, now we go to World Rally Championship. The Argentine round was won by Jari Matti Latvala, and by the name you can tell, he's from Finlandia. Now, Marc Marquez was resting this past weekend, but the rookie MotoGP champion, he is on the same program as Lewis Hamilton, race after race from pole position, so we wish him all the best. In some other news, Mr. Rogers, McLaren may test with Honda Power in November at Yas Marina after the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, and that should be very, very exciting. And Mr. Richard Branson of Virgin Airlines, he is back in motorsports. Jaime Alguersuari and Sam Bird, one of your favorites, will fly with Virgin Team and Formula E Racing. And you know, Formula E Racing will also have a team from the U.S.
Yes, as a matter of fact, put together by Michael Andretti.
That is correct.
And the teams are just now getting their cars. So, I mean, I'm happy for all of this. But if we're complaining about the lack of volume in Formula One, what do you do in a Formula E race?
I don't know, man. And the car is a good-looking car, I have to say that.
It is.
Now, here is some interesting information, especially for our UK-based Familia members. You are invited to an exclusive Williams F1 dinner hosted by Sir Frank Williams, his daughter Claire, O'Claire, and their trio of talented drivers, Massa, Bottas, and Susie Wolf. She will go toto with the boys. And this is happening on July 2nd, and your invitation is, according to their ad, just £500 per person. This is so cheap, the charming host of F1 Weekly has already turned it down.
You know, I saw the advertisement for this dinner, and it's going to be a question and an answer. You'll be able to chit-chat with the drivers, and only 40 seats are available, so it's going to be a nice, small, intimate affair, and I was hoping the president of European operations for F1Weekly.com might be going, but we never know.
If you go there, your first question will be, where is my martini?
Exactly. And, of course, shaken, not stirred.
There you go. And, you know, some sad news from the time of last podcast. This was very sad. You know, Nigel Stepney was killed in a road accident.
Yes.
That was very bad in England. Obviously, you know, he made a lot of contribution to the world of motor racing, worked with a lot of great drivers, including Schumacher, of course, but then was, you know, came in the news because of the Spygate and all that kind of stuff. So our condolences to his family. And just a few days ago, on May 4 in Tennessee, Al Pease passed away And he always will have a place in motor racing. He was born in England, but was, known as a Canadian driver. He's the only driver in F1 history to have been disqualified by being too slow. And this was in the 1969 Canadian Grand Prix. And then just a couple of days ago, news came, which, really kind of affected me because I've seen this gentleman on racing history of Indy 500 so many years. A.J. Watson, a legendary name in IndyCar racing, passed away. He was originally from Southern California and worked as a car builder and mechanic from 1949 to 1984. And, Clark, one day, many, many years ago, when ESPN used to show, highlights of Indy 500, I was watching a race from the late 40s, and I could not believe that one of the guys holding the board was A.J. Watson. So he was there for a long time. In 1958, his Watson Offenhauser won the Race of Two Worlds, which pitted Indy cars against F1 cars at Monza. And many, many years ago, one evening, I had a great conversation with him at the Long Beach Grand Prix. And this meeting and a brief encounter I had with Herman Long, who raced the original Silver Arrows before the Second World War, are some of my most memorable moments, which I will cherish as long as my homey heart is still beating.
Very good, Nas. That was touching. I have to get a tissue.
Yeah, sure. And hopefully Christopher DeHardy can talk to some people about A.J. Watson and give us a report and an interview. And we'll be happy to play it on the podcast. Okay, now let's take a look at main in the history of motor racing. Just a few things I wrote down here. May 30th, 1964, a huge fiery crash involving many cars claimed the lives of Eddie Sachs and Dave McDonald in the 48th running of Indy 500. This race was won by A.J. Foyt in what would be the final victory for a front-engine roadster. Eddie Sachs was born in 1927 in Allentown, Pennsylvania. In 1961, he was on his way to victory at the Brickyard when he had to make a very late race stop for fresh tires, giving A.J. Foyt the first of his four victories in the 500. Dave McDonald was from El Monte in Southern California and raced Corvettes and Cobras with success before racing at Indy. And of course, the first ever Formula One race took place in May 1950. And interestingly, one team was missing, and that team was Scuderia Ferrari. But after missing the first day, they have made a huge, huge contribution to the world of motor racing. And it was in the month of May, very sadly and tragically in 1982, that two drivers were killed, Gilles Villeneuve in qualifying for the Belgian Grand Prix at Zolder, and a driver from Garland, Texas, Gordon Smiley, he was killed at Indy during practice. And of course, the Lorenzo Bandini tragedy in Monaco was also in May. That is from 1967, sir. Any thoughts, Mr. Rogers?
No, outstanding facts there. Those are good things to remember. Keep up the good work, Nasser. And another outstanding Motorsports Mondial from yourself. So keep up the good work. We do go to Monaco next weekend. This is exciting stuff.
Monaco. Well, the man on pole will win the race, is my prediction. And if there is rain, it's going to be harum scarum.
Yes, not only that, but last weekend they had the Monaco Historics, which are very exciting, and Monsieur le Professeur himself was there in a vintage Renault F1 Turbo V6 car.
Yeah, the Historics take place every 2 years, and this, I think, we need to have a entourage attend one of these races with one of our European support vehicles.
Yes, it's very exciting. This was the ninth Grand Prix Historique de Monaco. And like I said, Alain Prost got behind his Renault F1 Turbo, the RE40, which raced in the Formula One World Championship in 1983. Very exciting stuff. That Turbo V6 put out 750 horsepower. It was a very exciting thing. I wish I could have been there, Nasser, but one day I will.
Yes, I'm sure you will.
There you have it. I'm going to move on, and we've got some 50 words on the Spanish Grand Prix from the the F1 Weekly forum members. And I do want to remind our forum members, they get a little excited and they forget. It's 50 words on the Spanish Grand Prix, not tit for tat where you're responding to somebody else's 50 words and then all of a sudden I've got a 150-word paragraph in front of me. So please, let's keep it 50 words. Nice, simple, and concise. So let's start off with Kehe Sin. He says, oh, another race where we have actual racing, albeit one where we have the Mercedes race and then the other one. Meanwhile, Ricciardo gets on the podium again, but will he stay there? Leon Bray, first lap without incident, and the race really started over the last 15 laps. Vettel handed out lessons in overtaking from 15th to 4th. Mercedes wins by 48 seconds. Yay says, it took 3 years for the Schumacher domination to get a little tiring for me. I'm fed up after only three races. Neon Zapper says, the elevation changes of this Spain GP circuit helped me overtaking exciting. It's good to see Hamilton completely focused while Vettel proved he can drive any car, not just a fast one. And lucky for Maldonado, it's on to Monaco, where passing is nearly impossible. Oh, let me add, F1 Weekly supporter Felipe Nasser, respectable, first time out, P14 from practice, ahead of some more well-known drivers. Tricky Dick, which we all love, of course. I, too, am worried that this season will be a walkaway. I feel the bigger issue is that this seems to be a theme of Formula One, i.e. domination. Vettel walked away with it last year, Mercedes this year. I fear F1 is going through a sustained period of non-competitive racing. Dr. Mark F. Not a bad race by Barcelona standards. A slow burner with some entertainment as the strategies unfolded. The Newey factor trumped home Alonso advantage, and Seb drove well to his distant fourth. The Bulls are now running, but they're not going to catch up in time. Has Lewis been eating crab apples? Okay, and a Koala. Not the most interesting race unless you are a Hamilton Mercedes fan. Vettel did well to recover from his position of 15th. The Ricciardo-Vettel tussle was impacted by Vettel's grid penalty, but I look forward to seeing how it continues in the next few races. Okay, from Philip Pegler. I'm feeling a slight sense of deja vu all over again. 1988 revisited. However, we should enjoy this because the level of domination happens only once in a generation. It's interesting to note that while Vettel has certainly stamped his authority over F1 from 2010 to 13, it was not with this kind of performance currently being shown by the Mercedes team. Many people complain about domination of a driver or his team. However, I don't recall this being a problem in 88, 92, or 93. Senna led at Monaco by 53 seconds in 1988 before crashing out. But had he gone to win, no one would have complained about domination. The performance of today's cars is so much closer than it was back then in the 80s and early 90s. So we should commend Mercedes on a job well done. And let us acknowledge that Michael Schumacher will have undoubtedly contributed to this year's performance during his time at Mercedes. To all of the other teams, I say get to work and raise your game. Bring on Monaco and let the Hamilton assault continue. Viva Ali G. Okay, and finally, from Chemix. I'm not sure I'd agree with that. Schumacher left long before development of the chassis for this season started, and there wasn't any large improvements in the cars. From day one of testing, this new car was fast, which was before driver input. I think Ross Brawn and the engineering team at Mercedes did need to be given the credit, and if any drivers helped along the way, it was Hamilton and Rosberg. So there you have it. Thanks, everyone, at the F1 Weekly Forum. 50 words only, please. Thank you very much. Nasser, I don't even have to ask for a prediction. Lewis Hamilton wins in Monaco, right?
Well, that's what it looks like. But you know, one thing I'm looking forward to, and I'm hoping, I believe it was 1965 when Peter Revson won a Formula 3 race at Monte Carlo. And I don't think we've seen an American victory there. And I'm hoping and hoping that Alexander Rossi, who has now won a GP2 race, first for an American, if he could pull that off, I'm going to be very happy.
That would be very exciting. I don't see it happening, though. Fantastic podcast, Nasser. Another outstanding job. Really appreciate it. Hopefully, once we get settled down, the podcast will be coming out a little bit faster. But there you have it, and there you go.
Yes, sir. The game plan is I settle down by the end of this month in my own casa, and then starting June, we do, by maybe by Tuesday, put it out by Tuesday, publish it by Tuesday, I should say. And also, we would like to go back to the weekly format and do more features on Mondial and Historics and Mantras and what have you.
Exactly. Outstanding job, Nass. There you have it, and there you go. I'm looking forward to Monaco. I'm predicting that both Mercedes get punted out and Fernando wins. Ha ha!
Dream the impossible dream.
That's one of my favorite songs, Nasser.
Okay, sir.
I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
And my thanks to everybody for listening also. Bye now.